So I hit random and Twilight Mayor novel shows up. It's kind of weird. Let me see. One more random.
Okay.
National Register of Historic Places listing in Vandenberg County, Indiana.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Coming to you live as it happens from TJP World Headquarters. How are you, Ted?
Good, Jimmy. How are you?
Awesome. It's episode 99, one away from the mythical 100 podcast.
We are on the precipice.
That's it. All right. Let's get to some beer before we get into anything, and then we can move on.
Yes. Who's going first?
Why don't you go first?
Okay, I'll go first. So my beer ties into what we've been watching. On the plane back from Washington, D.C., I saw El Camino, which is that Breaking Bad movie event. You saw it, right, a couple weeks ago?
I did not see it yet.
Oh, you haven't seen it?
I heard it was pretty good, though.
It's really good. It's kind of like... it's the ending for Pinkman that you wanted to see in the show. If I remember the show correctly, the show at the end really focused on Walter White.
It did, yeah.
His character, and Pinkman kind of got lost.
Would you say it's a one and done sort of a deal, like to end out?
It's definitely a movie. It is the swan song for Pinkman. It's beautifully, you know, plotted out and well scripted. You know, it kind of picks up right before everything leaves off. So it has this beautiful. It's a beautiful swan song for Pinkman. So,
and Walter White, they don't even do they bring him into it, or do they do anything with it?
There's a
you don't have to tell me. I'll probably watch it.
There's a bit of a flashback in there, but kind of the sad, sweet story of it. Well, here, I'll crack the beer and then we'll see. The beer is from Knee Deep Brewing Company and it's called Breaking Bud.
Ah, there you go.
And it's actually like inspired. Can you see it?
Yeah. So I had one a few weeks ago from them because the little green guy. So I finally did my job here at Trailer Junkies and to go see the past four beer cans I had, because all the labels are fun. You can go to trailerjunkiespodcast.com, episodes 95 to this episode. So that'll be five cans in a row.
Oh, you did it?
So I kept them and I'm like, I got to get them up there. And I was just totally procrastinating over the past month. So I finally got all the pictures taken and got them all done.
All right, I'll crack this here.
All right, while you're doing that, I have some Mac Drizzle Gold from Altamont Beer Works in Livermore, California. So can you see that one there?
Oh, nice.
Yeah, Mac Drizzle. I got some Mac Drizzle. So what it says here, I should read this because it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
This ale, what it is a hop forward golden ale with notes of melon, gooseberry, passion fruit, and lychee. I don't even know what that is.
Lychee.
Everywhere you drink it, it is a party, y'all. Go stupid.
Crack that.
So there you go. All right. So it's a golden ale. It is 5.2 ABV.
Nice.
Yeah, so pretty mild one for Sunday night recording.
That's right. So mine is a 6.5 ABV, and it's a 50 IBU.
50 IBU. I don't think this shows. No IBU, just one pint.
There you go.
So, wow, it is hop forward, that's for sure. Ooh, it's like a, it's sweet like a hazy, but it's not a hazy.
Mm.
Yeah, it's nice and clean looking. That's what I like. It's kind of grapefruity. Yeah, definitely grapefruity. What did they say? They said passion fruit, gooseberry.
And lychee fruit.
Notes of melon. What's lychee fruit?
Lychee fruit. I don't know. It's big in the Philippines.
Oh, okay. Apparently it's big for Mac Drizzle. I just like saying Mac Drizzle. All right. So you had a week out of town and...
Had a week out of town, you know, getting a bunch of stuff in line. It's kind of... you know, not podcast fodder, but it was a lot of work.
Yeah, I bet.
But so back to the Breaking Bad story. At the beginning of the summer, Bryce had the appendectomy, And when he had his appendix out, we had to go to the emergency room first off.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was sad. Well, you know, I didn't know at the time, but I saw Robert Forrester go into the emergency room at the same time.
Okay.
And I guess he died over the summer. And it was sad, but I was like, oh no, we saw him when we were in the hospital with Bryce, you know, and we didn't, at the time, I didn't think it was right to, you know, talk about it. But then after seeing El Camino, you know, he plays a significant character in the film. So I thought it was neat to think fondly of the time that I saw him in the emergency room, you know, not under the greatest of circumstances. I didn't like, you know, intrude on his emergency room trip, but
it's a little bit more intrusive in the emergency room than it is when they're eating dinner.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
You don't want to be.
Yeah, he died October 11th, 2019. So just a couple months ago.
Just a couple months ago. So I guess this is one of his last projects in El Camino.
All right.
But yeah, I've watched a lot of stuff and we'll get to that later. But how was your week?
Week was good. I brewed a Belgian triple today. So a home brew.
Nice.
That went well and is right now the fermentation is going strong. So I thought that was really cool that, you know, I made a good batch of yeast and it's just rocking already. Yeah, you know, I also had some counterpoints that we talked about because we kind of slacked a little bit about the monopoly power is killing Hollywood on that Factually podcast, and he interviewed Matt Stoller. So, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about that.
Okay, cool.
To get your take. I mean, we don't have to go too in deep. I have a few ideas about it. But yeah, I mean, other than that, the week was pretty mild. I mean, you know, not anything spectacular. Boys are still in swimming and just kind of just going along. Oh, one thing that did happen. How did I forget? There was an achievement award.
Oh, cool.
On Friday. So Mikey, he's in TK, mm-hmm. and he got a math achievement award and a reading achievement award. So then we're sitting there and we're like, when Timmy goes, different time of the day, when Timmy goes, the math award comes and goes and we're like, huh, he's pretty good at math. Surprising.
Yeah.
The reading award comes and goes. Huh.
Oh, no.
But what I thought he was getting an award, you know. Well, of course, there's other awards.
Yes.
So he gets a music award.
Oh, that's awesome.
So it's like the Grammys up in here. So I asked him, I said, a music award? Wow, what did you do for a music award? He's like, I have no idea. I said, well, apparently you either play an instrument or you sing or something. So I guess he, during like the Christmas stuff and the Halloween stuff, they had all these different songs and everything. And like, he just knew all the songs and he was able to sing them really well and all that stuff. So he got a music award.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was, it caught us completely off guard. We weren't expecting any musical talent coming from this family. So I thought that was pretty awesome.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah. So then, anyway, really quick, I'll just talk, give the brief overview of what this podcast was.
Oh, yes. Tell me. Because I only listened to half of it, I think, so.
Okay. So essentially, it is that the big conglomerates are taking over.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at things like, and he uses like a Walmart, for example. When a Walmart comes into town, you know, all the other 99 stores go out of business or whatever, and then those people go work for Walmart, and then like if you want a chair, you could have any chair as long as it's one that Walmart carries because there's no choice otherwise,
right?
And then they drive down wages because the people in the town don't have a choice to go work anywhere else because it's one of the only retail jobs in town, and you know all the things we hear bad about Walmart, you know, and Amazon's the same way, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And it was just kind of making the argument that monopolies and duopolies and things are essentially getting in the way of creativity, or getting in the way of allowing us to have things. So, for example, you could have somebody with a good idea, but the only way to bring your idea to market is to go meet with the lawyers at Amazon, so then they right. you could get into their distribution chain because they're right. clogging up all the channels and stuff, you know, And it was that, and he uses like, I think it was Romancing the Stone or something. And then that moved on to Back to the Future. And then it kind of followed that progression. But with today, if you have a simple idea that you want to bring to the studios, like their supply chain essentially is already kind of laid out based on like plugging and chugging ideas and stories into formulas.
Yes.
And if your story isn't fitting into one of those formulas, it's probably not going to get made. And that's kind of what we've talked about when we look at Netflix and they look at all the data. And then you have good looking women and drug dealers and gunplay and high speed chases and Ferraris and
right.
the silly comedy, and it all fits into one movie. And then it's like the formula now, you know? And so that's kind of the rough overview of what it is. And I would encourage anybody to go listen to it. I thought it was really informative.
Yeah.
The Factually podcast with Adam Conover. Is that it? I think
sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts?
So, yeah, I initially thought there's two movies that I like to bring up when people talk about this. It's 21 Bridges, which is a film by the Russo brothers, and Knives Out, which we just saw. Yeah.
Oh, you just talked about that one.
Exactly. So these movies are made by directors and auteurs, writer directors that are from the Marvel and Lucas machine. And as always, I don't speak for Disney, but I will say that, you know, the reason that they can go out and make these movies is because they got a payday from, you know, making a blockbuster film. So it's kind of like in the record business, I've heard some artists say you make your first album you make for the people in the record label, and then your second album you make for yourself. You know, if you're popular, if you know what people want to hear, then that's the first album you make, and you kind of get success and you get notoriety through that, and then you get to share what you want to do on your second album. And I think there is kind of a formula to that in this. I mean, Rian Johnson doesn't do it that way. I mean, he started in the indie world and then he got a blockbuster, you know, a deal with Lucas to do the Lucas movie. And then he went back to something like Knives Out, where he got to write and direct and create this. But he had access to talent pools and stars that he might not have had access to if it wasn't part of the bigger machine and the conglomerate, you know? So there are definitely trade-offs that you make, but unlike the chairs at Walmart or something like that, these are all artistic endeavors at the end of the day. So when you play into the machine and you make a piece for them, or you make a piece where you're contributing your artistic style and your taste into the machine and you're kind of letting it be molded into something, then you get a chance to get a smaller paycheck, get multi-million dollar stars and get them to cut their rate too, because you're like, we're just making a small movie that's going to do gangbusters because you're going to have fun making it, I'm going to have fun making it, and people are going to have fun watching it, you know? So you have Daniel Craig cracking a smile because he's not doing Bond, you know what I mean? But Daniel Craig does Bond for his day job so he can moonlight and be, you know, the Southern Kentucky Fried, you know, detective or whatever it's called, the Foghorn Leghorn detective in Knives Out. So I think it's all about trade-offs, and I don't think you could ever squeeze out the idea of this niche movies or small budget, small scope movies. And that's why you have like Fox Searchlight, and you have these, even the conglomerates know that you can make a lot of money, or you can make a lot of fame, you know, you can, by having your A24 films, or, you know, the Fox Searchlight or the Focus Features films, you know? So there's a place for everything, unlike a chair at Walmart, and art's kind of like that. And then even this past weekend, I went to a couple of Christmas parties and I was talking to one of the, writers, animators of Rick and Morty. And I was like, oh, I'm a big fan. And he's like,
that's cool.
And he's like, oh yeah, it's great. And I said, it's a little hard to watch it because I don't know where it is. You know, it's like, it's Adult Swim. And yeah, you could like log into Adult Swim if you had cable. But if you don't have cable, you're kind of out of luck. And like me, I'm just renting it at the library after the season's complete. You know, I just wait for the season to finish and then I rent it at the library. But he was like, I kind of, you know, it would be easier if the three companies just owned everything, and then it'd be easier to get everything. So even people that are in the industry are having trouble finding their own show and their own way to watch it. So I thought that's hilarious that, you know, he's like, it sucks to have, you know, the three big guys just owning everything and to be this little mom and pop operation that people love the content of Rick and Morty. But it was just, it was funny to hear him say that.
Yeah. And some of the thoughts that I have to kind of go along those lines, and just to touch on that really quick, I think one of them is, yeah, if the big three owned everything, then everything comes through their distribution channels and stuff. The other side of it is, I don't think anybody would like the Rick and Morty stuff. I mean, if I don't know, whatever. I mean, it's probably more HBO material than it is Disney material, possibly.
Right.
But let's say they came and said, like, yeah, we're going to buy you out for X millions of dollars. I'm sure the people on that show would be like, sure thing. It's, you know, it kind of goes back to when you hear, like, you know, Metallica does whatever, and then one day, you know, somebody complains, oh, they sold out. Well, yeah, because if you didn't sell out, you would still be in the garage. Exactly. I mean, at some point, you want to make a living at your craft if that's what you're trying to do. The other side of it is, you know, I think it's romantic to say that, you know, a town should not have a big store, or an Amazon type internet thing shouldn't exist, and your town is full of all these little mom and pop toy stores and bookstores and, you know, like it's 1950 or something. And there's something romantic about that, and I think it's very cool, but it's also not real. And most of what these places sell, if we want to look at it that way, are commodities. Mm-hmm. You know, you're just looking at, you know, like whatever, Lego sets.
Yeah.
You can get Lego sets anywhere. You know what I mean? For like, and everybody's selling them for the same price. It's just, what's the easiest way to get it into your house?
Right.
So when you're looking then at, you know, the studios and Hollywood and monopoly power and so on, you know, on the one hand, like you said, it's a trade-off. If it was art houses and it was, you know, Sundance Film Festival type things, which people get those things out there. I mean, Thunder Road, for example, that's not controlled by Disney or, you know, any of the others. But you would never have the Avengers series, or you would never have all of these, like, you know, the Star Wars type Lucas series that, you know, all the different movies that come out, because, I mean, those things are so expensive to create and produce and write and direct and everything that comes out of them and distribute and get it out to the theaters. It's that if you were working in like the mom and pop little art houses, you would never have those kind of movies, and the fans of those movies would never get the opportunity to enjoy them.
Yeah.
So you're right. It is a trade-off. And I think where the biggest issue comes in is that the power of an Amazon or a Netflix or the power of a Lucasfilm or a Disney or any of these huge ones is that they can gobble up others and they can squeeze them out of the market. Or what they do is they wind up crafting a show, and then in the monetary chain of however it is, the people just don't make as much as they otherwise could, you know. But I don't know, it's really complicated, of course. I mean, there's no easy this or that, you know. But I think the big studios need to exist, otherwise we would miss out on those super expensive, highly produced feature films that you're just not going to get from some guy in his living room on YouTube.
Yeah, I think the art house movies that you're talking about, I think people enjoy the popcorn movies. We've talked about it. And
of course, yeah.
Popcorn movies come from Blockbuster. Blockbusters, not Blockbuster, but from Blockbusters, yeah.
Right, I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah.
So with that, what do you say that kind of leads into what we've been watching? How about we do that, and then we'll finish up with our trailers, because
at 99 episodes, we can do whatever we want.
That's right. So as I mentioned, you know, you have the Marvel Avengers series. I don't know. Series? What would you even call it?
The Avengers, the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Yeah, but it's not like a series of movies. I mean, what?
It's actually called phases. So it's
phases. Okay.
There are four phases of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Got it. So anyway, we finished with Endgame finally.
Oh, cool. Did you like it?
You know what? I cried too, Ted.
No, did you?
Yeah. Yeah. Tears of joy. It's finally over. But it was cool seeing all the characters come together in the final battle.
Right.
And I'm not even going to say spoilers or anything. I waited so long. Everybody.
Oh, you're so late to the party.
Totally. Yeah.
You're the last one.
Yeah, I was gonna say, if anybody hasn't seen it, then, you know, hey, whatever, get on board, get on the slow train. But another one of those, like, we have to destroy the earth to save the earth.
Yes.
You know, kind of those big battles and stuff. But it was awesome seeing all the people come together from all the movies. You know, I like the Captain America twist at the end.
Oh, yeah, it was great.
Yeah, when he goes back in time, obviously, and then, you know, he figured he's just going to stay there. So I thought that was a pretty cool twist. I didn't see, you know, I didn't expect to see. And then the one question I had in the credits, some of the actors had their signature the way they did it. And some of them, they just like had them like regular credits that you would normally see. Do you know any, do you have any insight into that or what that's about?
Which part? It's been so long since I've seen it.
So the credits, I mean, generally speaking, at that point in the credits, you would have seen like a tag at the end, right? That kind of teases the next movie.
Oh, right, 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 right. The button.
And yeah. In Endgame, obviously, it's the end game. It's the last one. So they didn't have a teaser at the end, you know, that was a tag. And instead, they had like, they showed the actors and then they had like their name and the actor and their name and they went through like almost all of them from all the movies.
Yes.
With the
signature.
But there was a handful that had signatures.
Yes.
Yeah. Why didn't everybody or why just them? You know, I didn't get that.
I don't know. Maybe that's a $20 million club. Maybe those are the people that got paid $20 million to be in that. I don't know.
Yeah, possibly. But even some of the bigger actors that you would have expected to have those signatures didn't, and some of the lesser actors had this. It was just weird. I didn't really understand that.
Yeah, but did you get there was a bit of a, not a scene, but they had a sound at the end. Did you hear the sound?
Sound at the end?
Yeah, they have a little sound at the end, and there's
like at the very, very end.
At the very, very end, over the last bit where you're expecting the final scene to come up, there's a bit of a hammer and an anvil. So it's like Iron Man in heaven, like smacking the hammer to the anvil like he did in the caves of the Middle East for where he did the first Iron Man suit.
Oh, no. Well, you know what? We got like however far and what it wound up doing was, you know how like it when you stream things and then it shrinks to the little window.
Oh yeah, right.
So when it did that, we were like, okay, they're not going to show anything, because if they did, then they would have kept it big, you know. So then we were like, it's over, we just cut it then. so okay I'll go back. Yeah, I'll watch.
Play that last, you know, 15 seconds or something like that.
Yeah,
and you'll hear that anvil and hammer going to town, and you have a little, you shed another tear for Tony Stark.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, again, like we said, popcorn movie and stuff. Yeah. You know, and it's so funny though, man. It's like that we've talked about the Avengers over the course of all these episodes,
right?
And it's like, you know, you go from like it's the Earth or whatever, it's California, and then it's like the United States, and then it's the whole planet. And then next thing you know, it's like the solar system and then the universe. I mean, just keep growing and growing, and, you know.
And then a planet that's a skull of another living being somewhere else. Right?
Yeah, I mean, it just got to the point. It's like, how much bigger, you know, I mean, like Infinity War, like how much bigger does it go? You know, infinity. And then they even have another one that goes even bigger.
And speaking of bigger, how about Thor, huh?
Oh, yeah, that was pretty funny. That was pretty funny. You know, hey, that's what happens when you sit around drinking beer all day.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, that and then, you know, Mandalorian, as is typical for the week.
Yes.
I enjoyed this episode, I think, more than some of the previous ones. I like, you know, the prison ship and the whole thing there.
Yeah, and Bill Burr.
Yeah, Bill Burr. That was pretty funny.
That's
hilarious. I know. I'm like, Bill Burr, what the heck? You know, and it's so funny, too, because, like, whenever he talks, he just sounds like his stand-up.
Yeah, it's just like he's going to crack a joke. And
His same intonation, you know, like, yeah, it's just hilarious. I mean, that was so funny.
His acting range is pretty narrow, but he, you know, he's fun. He has fun doing it, so.
Yeah, well, he shows up on the screen. I turned to Clarissa, I said, Bill Burr? So. But wouldn't it have been hilarious if the Mandalorian takes off his helmet and it was Bill Burr? Well, that ain't going to happen.
Right. Are we ever going to take off his helmet? What do you think?
I don't know. I don't think so. Not this season. Or if he does, it's going to be an off-screen, like, take the helmet off, put it down, and that'll be the cliffhanger.
Right, to end the season.
Exactly. And then the baby Yoda will have some look on his face like, whoa. And then the last thing we watched last night was Blood Road.
Oh, what's that?
Yeah, so that was on Amazon Prime. And there's this former mountain bike pro, Rebecca Rush. And her father was shot down in Vietnam as like a bomber pilot type guy or something in an F-4, an F-4 Phantom. So at some point a few years ago, they found like his teeth at some crash site. And when they did the analysis and everything, they learned it was him. And that was like all of his remains were just these teeth.
Wow.
And so she rode the Ho Chi Minh Trail all the way to the crash site. And then with like, you know, a crew or whatever. So she mountain biked to the Ho Chi Minh Trail to this crash site. And it was kind of like a history of the war a little bit. And then kind of like the current state of Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And then rode on to Ho Chi Minh City, which was formerly Saigon. But I think the biggest thing, though, that was shocking about it is how the country, like the bomb craters and stuff, are all still there. And they don't, nothing grows in them because they're just full of water.
Okay.
So, and there's just like, as they do these aerial photos, you just see bomb craters everywhere, and they're just full of water everywhere. Like these little like little ponds in a sense, just all over the place.
So do you think it's analogous to the idea of the country of Vietnam hasn't ever fully recovered from the war that was fought on their land?
Oh, I think that's a very true statement. I mean, they still have dirt roads and mud villages and stuff, you know? Yeah. I mean, obviously they have their big cities, but most of the like people on the countryside and everything, I mean, their lives probably haven't changed in, you know, 50 years or so. Well, for a long time, you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. So it was insightful for sure. And it was just a, you know, it was like one of those kind of heartwarming stories, you know, I'm this mountain bike pro who grew up without a dad, and that adversity led me to be who I was and who I am. And then, you know, I used my bike to go find him and to visit the crash site. And it was, you know, kind of her reconnecting with the dad she didn't really know. And so it was like one of those heartwarming kind of stories and stuff. And then with the history behind it and everything, it was pretty cool.
That's amazing. So
yeah.
So she's our age then, right?
If I had to guess, I think she said he died in like 72 and she was like 3 years old. So maybe she was born in 69. Yeah. So, but yeah. So what would that be? That'd be like 50, 51, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
How about yourself? What did you watch all week? So you said the Pinkman one.
El Camino. I watched that. I watched, what did I watch? I watched The Kominsky Method.
Oh yeah.
And that the second season of that was amazing. It was another great season.
Really?
I'm scared. I'm scared that, you know, we're going to have a third season and I'm going to be lukewarm on it. but the second season held me. I watched it, you know, I binged it, and it had enough variety in it from the first season that it held me. It had interesting characters. Paul Reiser with balding with a huge a ponytail. It's kind of funny. And then what else did I watch? I saw the end of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and I'm sad to say I'm not a fan of this Quentin Tarantino film.
Oh, really?
So very interesting to wait for this, to be excited about it coming, and then to have it kind of hit me lukewarm. So that sucks. And then I tried to watch Mr. Robot, but I couldn't bring myself to do it. So so that was that.
So I looked up Rebecca Rush just for the sake of curiosity. So born August 25th, 1968, but I didn't bring that up to say her, I was just going to leave it at that. But what I wanted to mention is Wikipedia changed their whole layout.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that was the reason why I was on Wikipedia. So I figured I may as well just say it there. But yeah, the whole layout's changed. It's like Wikipedia 3.0 or something.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, it's very cool. And then there's like little lines and random and I don't know, like random. So I hit random and Twilight Mayer novel shows up. That's kind of weird. Let me see. One more random.
Okay.
National Register of Historic Places listing in Vandenberg County, Indiana.
Hmm.
Okay, so random is really random, I guess. All right. So then how about In the Heights?
Okay.
Let's get to our first trailer of the night. You a musical fan for not at the theater? I mean, when I say theater, I mean like on stage theater, not on screen theater. Like, are you a musical fan for those kinds of movies?
I do. I like Rodgers and Hammerstein. What is it? Is that what it is?
Something like that.
Rodgers and Hammerstein? Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the Mikado. I was in the Mikado. I was the Mikado in the Mikado, which is, you know,
the Mikado,
although it's the title character, it's actually a pretty minor character. So,
but you like it on the silver screen or on the TV screen, whatever. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a live performance.
Right. I mean, there is a different energy when you see something like that live. So I appreciate it. And I'm sorry, I said Rodgers and Hammerstein. I think that's Sound of Music or something. But I was thinking of Gilbert and Sullivan when I said the Mikado. But yes, so it definitely has more of an energy to it. And of course, this has this Hamilton feel because it's, you know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, it's ethnic. And would you say it's an anti-Trump musical?
No, I think it predates Trump, and I think it.
Oh, okay.
And I think it feels more like Do the Right Thing than anything Trump.
So the production predates Trump, or the storyline predates Trump?
Oh, definitely not the production.
That's what I mean. So now that the production's here, do you think it's like it's kind of geared towards like keep the dreamers in the country sort of a thing?
Oh, yeah. I don't even think of it like that, I guess. I think to me, Lin-Manuel Miranda is, you know, the auteur behind this, even though he didn't direct it. But it feels like this is the song, this is the story that he had written before he wrote Hamilton.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, he got his fame and fortune from Hamilton, but this is the story from his heart, you know? Again, you know, musical film, cinematic musical, and Hamilton's like a Broadway musical, which has some elements of cinema to it. But I think this feels like the movie that he wanted to make, you know, like this is closer to his lived experience, you know?
So from his neighborhood and growing up and upbringing and all that kind of stuff you're saying.
Yes.
Yeah. Before like he, well, does Hamilton.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, it sounds like you're pretty into wanting to see this.
Oh, yeah. I think this is a huge, this looks like a huge production, doesn't it? I mean, there's so much going on.
Oh, the choreography, it looks really awesome. And so many of the scenes have, like, large, it's not like one guy singing and dancing.
No, huge ensemble dance sequences, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, you got to get all these people on board. And, I mean, the rehearsal must just go and go and go. I think this would be, you know, with the right setup or in the right theater or whatever, I think the music would stuff. I mean, especially if they do it in like 7.1 or the Dolby Atmos or something, yeah, where you have like speakers all over the place. I mean, I think it would really be lively as if you're in the middle of these ensembles. You know what I mean?
Oh, it would be phenomenal. So it is definitely in the theaters, In the Heights, you know, like. Yeah, I'm excited to see it.
I wonder if there's a theater in the Heights.
I'm sure there's many.
Well, that would be the one to go see it in, I guess, right?
Yeah.
You know, and everybody be in there hooting and hollering, breaking into song and dance.
Doing it in the aisles.
In the aisles, right. No, this looks cool. I mean, I like the look and feel of it. I mean, the music sounds like it's really, what's a good way to put it? I don't know, like, well, obviously it's original, but I mean, it sounds like it's going to have a high tempo and upbeat, I guess.
It has an energy,
energy. There you go. Yeah. It's like a positive feel. Like, even though it's kind of a serious message, like there's all these people who are here doing great things. Why are we going to like boot them out of the country? But like with that feel, but you're going to have the energy behind it to say like, you know, hey, we're all American at some point. You know what I mean?
Were you a fan of Hamilton? Did you listen to the songs or do any of that stuff?
I have not seen it.
Oh, okay.
But I have listened to it. And yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's incredible. I want to see it, but we just haven't had the opportunity.
Yeah, this sounds a lot like Hamilton to me, mm-hmm. which is strange to say because, you know, it's both are Lin-Manuel Miranda, but they both have very disparate topics. So I think it's interesting to know that his fingerprints of songwriting are all over it, you know?
For sure. And in a way, I mean, it's both government. So, you know, at least yeah, there's an underlying theme there. Getting to an underlying theme, unless you had more.
No, let's go.
All right. An underlying theme, Down in a Well.
Down in a Well.
So Ghostbusters Afterlife.
So I was super excited to see this.
Yeah.
I didn't know how they were going to do it. We saw the reveal a few months ago of the Echo One in a barn under a tarp.
Right.
You know, and that was the first reveal.
I love, though, the nod, not only to the original when they showed him on TV or whatever, and mm-hmm. like they were talking about going through New York, but I love the nod to Egon.
Right. Uh-huh.
You know, when they said, yeah, my grandfather passed away and we're going through his stuff. And, you know, I mean, it's so awesome, you know?
It's a legacy. It is a true-to-life legacy of, you know, something that was buried ostensibly and then unearthed. And so is this storyline, you know? The storyline is unearthed by the, you know, the creator's child, you know? So it's a beautiful way to capture something like this, you know?
You know, the one thing that I thought was awesome is, and I don't recall it in the original one, but the gunner's chair that pops out of the side of the hearse, that was completely amazing. You know, on top of the gunner's chair and stuff, but the hot rod hearse flying through the wheat field or whatever that was.
Yeah, the fields. That was pretty neat. Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. Looking forward and excited to see it, you know, for sure.
And then it's kind of strange, but is Paul Rudd the everyman that you need in a film like this that is, you know, very comfortable? Everyone's comfortable with him on screen. And, you know, we know he can be serious. We know he can be funny. He has like this range. He's good with kids. You know what I mean? Like,
so what do you mean the everyman? Like he has that pleasant face that,
yeah.
You know, he's not going to be offensive in any way. So he's like a four quadrant actor.
He's a four quadrant actor. He's palatable by all, you know, he's not offensive.
I guess you kind of need that sort of a character in every movie, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you have the, you know, the Bill Burr and Mandalorian and you have Paul Rudd in this one, you know.
But I think that Bill Burr and Mandalorian worked because it's kind of like a cameo.
Yeah, I know.
One episode, one-off thing. But if Bill Burr was
He's not
in this,
coming back, sure.
If Bill Burr was in this, I think it would grate on you a little bit halfway through. You know, Bill Burr talking to kids isn't going to really be
right.
as sweet as Paul Rudd explaining it to these young,
right.
young new Ghostbusters, you know?
That's so funny. Yeah, for sure. But I mean, I don't know. Like, I think it's the story's probably, it's like everything is kind of coming back to haunt and they're going to just like reignite the Ghostbusters. Like, what do you call those guns? What were the guns?
Oh, the what are they? Plasma? Are they plasma?
Yeah, plasma something or others.
Plasma shooters or something?
All right, let's look this up. Ghostbuster gun name. Let's see. Oh, I'm on a Ghostbusters website that has a list of their equipment. Proton pack.
Proton.
Yeah. The ghost trap, of course. Who thinks this stuff up, you know? Yeah, so do you think now that they've kind of reinvigorated Ghostbusters, that Ghostbusters is going to, like, it's going to be more of maybe a new trilogy or something comes out, or is this a one and done?
Yeah, I'm interested to see how far this story goes within this, within the walls of this first movie. And, you know, now it kind of feels, I think there was, were there only two? I only remember there being Ghostbusters 1 and Ghostbusters 2. So
right, that's what I remember. And then there was like cartoons and
there's
stuff.
There's a cartoon, which is great.
Yeah.
But it would be interesting to see how they set this up because they're children. You know, it feels like a cool, maybe Goonies adventure, you know, within the Ghostbusters universe. So I think that's interesting. And then where does it leave it? Does it leave it open-ended? It should, I guess, if you want to kind of have an opportunity to franchise. But is that the big Sony executive in me talking?
So Harold Ramis, though, he wrote Ghostbusters, right? The original one?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so he's the one who thinks of the proton pack.
Right.
And then the poor guy dies and now they're like, you know, they're making a story out of
right.
out of his stuff.
Well, and Ivan Reitman too. So Ivan Reitman directed the first one and I'm sure he had a hand there
right.
and he also passed away.
Yeah.
And his child is doing this. So.
Yeah, and well Dan Aykroyd too, I guess, did the writing, but yeah, you know, I think it definitely needs to at least go into another one, however this thing ends. But you have to have, I mean, they did the first Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters 2. You got to have, like, you know, Ghostbusters Afterlife and then come up with, like, whatever, some new title.
A better Ghostbusters : something else.
Yeah, yeah. Like, they avenge all the good ghosts or something. I don't know. But you're going to see this, I'm assuming.
I'm definitely going to see this. Do you think they'll have an Egon ghost?
Oh, no, I don't think so. I think it would be too kitschy if they did that.
Too on the nose. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I apologize then.
Well,
I thought it'd be neat. A ghost Ghostbuster.
Yeah. I mean, out of respect, if the guy was still living, then I'd say go for it.
Oh.
But out of respect, that's why I said it'd be a little too kitschy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, out of respect for the guy, for the deceased,
mm-hmm.
like, you can't go that. I mean, maybe they would, but nah, can't do it.
Too distasteful.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you got to have respect for the guy. I mean, without him, you wouldn't have the movie to begin with.
Okay, good.
Yeah, so. But yeah, I'm definitely excited about this. Can't wait. I was a fan of the originals. And, you know, back in the 80s. Oh, you think they're going to come out with, you know, the Ghostbusters song? Or they're going to have a revision? Kind of like a redux?
Yeah. Right. What's his name? Ray Parker Jr.?
Ray Parker Jr., yeah. And what if Ray Parker Jr. does like a redux, like a new version of it?
I just want Bobby Brown to do like from Ghostbusters 2. Did you like 1 better than 2? Did you have a favorite?
I will say yes, because okay. I saw both. I vaguely remember the second one, and the first one is so ever present in my memory.
It's iconic. It's classic. It is the one.
Yeah.
But I connected more with 2.
Okay.
I was into that. I think I saw it. So I like Gremlins 2 better than Gremlins. I like Ghostbusters 2 better than Ghostbusters. And I also like Sammy Hagar better than David Lee Roth. So I'm not exactly the litmus test of what's better or not, but I do know what I like, and it's usually a little counterintuitive or counter to the norm.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I know the first one gets you warmed up. The second one brings you home.
Totally.
Now, did you see the 2016 reimagined Ghostbusters?
No. Oh, yeah. So that was the third one, the female Ghostbusters.
Correct, yeah.
Yes, I liked that one a lot.
I never saw it.
Oh, it was really good.
It was good?
It was really good.
Now that there's all these Ghostbusters out, that'd be a cool, like, a good long weekend of Ghostbusting. Boys, we're watching Ghostbusters.
So the best thing about Ghostbusters, I guess 2016, is Chris Hemsworth in that.
Oh, was he in this one?
Chris Hemsworth plays like they hire the secretary, and because they're all, you know, women, they hire this guy secretary, and he plays like a hot blonde guy.
Right, like a surfer dude.
a surfer dude, but he's dumb as a box of rocks. And
That's hilarious. And
they totally just hire him, and they're kind of, you know, half of them don't want him there because he's not very good at his job. Like, he doesn't know how to answer the phone and stuff. But the other half of them are like, but look at him.
Yeah, it's like the eye candy.
Yeah.
That's funny. That's funny. All right. So I'm assuming you're going to see this, as will I. Mm-hmm. And then last but not least for tonight is Disney's Mulan.
Yes.
So is that the title Disney's Mulan, or is it just Mulan?
I think it says Disney's Mulan. So
yeah,
I think they're embracing their ownership of this story in this told in this way, you know, so it's a further entrenchment of the story that they're going to tell.
So this is really not for young kids, right? I mean, wouldn't you say? It seems a little bit violent.
It does. I mean, I think it has action in it, and I think the action and the storylines are accentuated in this trailer. So I think things that are played, I'm sure that's going to be more comedic in parts. It's going to be deeper and more like the traditional animated, but...
Oh, that's why I the name sounds familiar.
Oh.
Because I'm like, why does it sound so familiar? But yeah, it was an animated, that's right.
Yeah, it was a great animated film. One of our favorites.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. And they kind of take some liberty with that original story. And I think maybe that's another reason why you would say Disney's Mulan, to know that even though we don't have Mushu, you know, per se, we have a phoenix instead. And, you know, like you said, it plays darker throughout this trailer. But all the ideas of legacy and honor and family are all still in this. So I think it's just played darker because it's live action.
And then another thing. So at the 52-second mark, when the dad says he's blessed with two daughters and he looks, you know, and then like there's that, it's like a quick edit.
Yeah.
The edit, I thought, or like the cut there. To me, it's like, it looks like he just trips.
Yeah.
I mean, and then everybody has that look of panic and terror on their face. Like he just got, you know, like executed or something. But I mean, it looks like he just trips. It's like, okay, wait a minute. What's going on here?
Everyone overreacts to him tripping.
Yeah. I mean, is that what he's doing, is tripping, or?
Yeah, it's hard to tell. I thought that.
It's hard to I played it over and over. I couldn't tell what was going on.
I had inferred that someone was either like lashing him or beating him or something like that. You know, it looked like it.
That's what I thought. The inference, you're right.
But it's inferred. It's not there. So
exactly.
Who knows, you know, what's actually going on there.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe that's one of the teasers. Like, does he trip or does he get like whipped? And then at 2:11, when she shows, like, when she does the sword thing and she puts up the two fingers,
mm-hmm.
all I could think of is Dikembe Mutombo, Not in My House. Like, she's just wiggling her fingers because she's going to deny.
She's blocking shots.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I mean, you know. And then, and then at the end of the trailer, she says her name, but, like, I couldn't understand how, like, what's her full name?
Oh, I don't, what do you mean? I thought it's just Mulan, right?
Or she says something then, and it's like, I can't understand, like, it just goes too fast or something for me. I miss it.
Oh, I'm Hua Mulan, yes. So,
I'm Hua Mulan, okay.
So I think it's a surname, right? It's like, I'm the feminine, I guess. I'm guessing that's what it is.
Gotcha.
But the true gist of that whole line is that I will bring honor to us all, which is, you know, part of the classic songs. And I think the biggest thing that Disney caught some flack for was to turn this into an action movie. And while it has these instrumental segments of extremely famous songs from the animated classic, I don't think that they want to sell this as a musical, and I don't know that they're going to even go into song per se throughout this thing. And I think they said that they weren't going
to
do it.
It didn't appear to.
Yeah.
Be, I mean, they didn't show any musical pieces.
Right.
Unlike in The Heights, where they showed lots of musical pieces.
It is the centerpiece of that.
Exactly. When did the animated one, when was it released?
That's a good question.
Oh, man, I thought you knew this stuff cold. Let's take a look here. 1998?
That's right. 1998.
Wow. You know, time gets by, man. Time gets by.
So it's interesting when we did the when Disney did Aladdin and they had the live action Aladdin, they had to give
from last year, you mean?
Right. They had to give Jasmine her own story, and she wasn't necessarily, she didn't wait to be saved by Aladdin and the genie. She kind of used her own empowerment to be a powerful, her own hero within her own story, you know?
She has agency.
Agency, there you go. That's what you say. But yeah, that's the thing I love about Mulan, the original movie, the original animated classic from 1998 has Mulan playing the role of powerful hero within her own story.
They didn't have to rewrite it.
They don't have to rewrite it. And it's very interesting to see, you know, because they didn't have to change it in the world of Me Too, they could just retell it. So it's interesting how what parts they would have to change.
Yeah, I gotcha.
If any.
For sure. All right, man. Do you have any other final thoughts for Mulan?
I'm excited to see it. I don't know what to expect, but I am excited to see it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you know, sometimes, and just a final thought on, you know, just trailer editing and cutting and things of that nature. Sometimes I find that the bigger the movie, the worse the trailer editing can sometimes be, because they're not really getting you there on the trailer itself, because there's probably an audience that's already going to go see it, and they're just throwing out the info to say, hey, this is coming out. Come to the shows.
The legacy cell is strong enough. That's all we have to say.
Exactly. Exactly. Because I thought that, you know, like the part where the guy trips, for example, I mean, it's so like awkward in a trailer cut, it seems, that either you keep it in or you, I mean, that scene just didn't really seem necessary.
Yeah, it's almost like you have to take the audience of the original movie and just remind them of certain plot points, you know, and as you remind them of certain plot points, you just play the emotion into the scene.
Exactly.
And then people that are new to it might be caught off guard, but the people that are tuned into it know, like, oh, that's because of, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a good point. So you think this is going to follow pretty close to the original?
To the action parts of the original, yes.
Okay.
It'll be interesting to see where how it deviates.
So then the deviation might just come because, like, culturally, you know, you look at, you know, 22 years later, society is a little bit different, and they're going to have to play into those differences from now to 1998.
Yes, in 1998 version, there was a lot more of her playing as a man. So she basically cross-dresses to go into the army.
Right.
And then in this, we'll see if she does.
Seems like she breaks out earlier.
Yeah, she breaks out earlier if she goes out, if she dresses as a man at all, you know?
It looks like she does a little bit, because the way they kind of introduce her, you know, like, I'm going to make soldiers out of you men or whatever.
Right.
You know, and then she's probably there like, wait, but I'm not a man. So, all right. Anything else that we needed to cover? Did we get everything? I think we got everything.
I think we got everything. How was your beer?
Oh, beer finished wonderful. It was really smooth. You know, sometimes like just having a 5.2, some like lower, I'm not saying it's low, but some lower ABV that's just not getting you just, you know, ripped,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to some of these like, you know, 10s and 12s that we've had in the past. By the time the show's over, I mean, you're just like slurring your words. And as it warmed, a lot of the fruit, like the forward fruit and citrus, kind of like leveled off a little bit.
Mm.
I thought it was a little bit too sweet to begin with, and that kind of calmed as it warmed a little bit, just sipping on it, you know.
Oh, good.
How about yourself?
Mine was really good. It's neat. It's an Indian Pale Ale, so it's an IPA, and I love IPAs. But it was very, very nice, and like you said, smooth. So yours was smooth. Mine was smooth.
Smooth.
And it as it warmed, it got a little bitier, but in the best ways.
Cool. And then, yeah, I'm going to have 5 weeks of fun beer cans up on TrailerJunkiesPodcast.com. So go check out episodes 95 to 99.
Awesome.
And, yeah, you'll see all the cool beer cans that I'll put up there. And You know, I've been putting them off to the side in the garage saying, like, I got to get this done. And then, like, every time I want to do it, something comes up. I mean.
But you knocked it out. You knocked it out. You did it.
That's it. Once we start getting paid for this gig, then, you know, I'll get them up right on time. So you could guarantee that. All right, man. Well, hey, you have a good night, and we'll talk to you. Well, I guess we'll talk to you at episode 100.
See you around the 100.
Yeah, looking forward to it, man. It's going to be exciting.
All right.
All righty.
Bye.
We'll catch you.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.